We are learning today in memory of, and this is something that we're all aware of because it's something that happened to even Abe and Eva, the loss of their granddaughter, Batya. And it was Batya Gittel Bat Moshe Aaron and Malka, correct? And she was my Talmida. And I think we all remember because we were together in Shir here just after she had passed. And so the Shiur is in her memory. And it's appropriate because the Shiur is about today's fast, which has always held a fascination for me because I grew up with that same adage that I'm sure everybody here heard, which is, what would Gedalia fast for me? And the other one, which is, who was Gedalia anyways? So I'm Gedalia. And Gedalia is a relatively unknown character. I say relatively in sort of the broader scope of Jewish knowledge. He's not certainly not unknown in Tanakh. But I want to talk about Tzom Gedalia to try to understand why it's so important. To be honest with you, I think Tzom Gedalia might be the hardest fast of the year. And the reason I say that is because, A, it's today, which always feels hardest, but because it comes right after 2 days of celebration. So it's kind of hard to go from that to fasting. The second thing is psychologically, when you're on a fast like Tisha B'Av or Yom Kippur, however hard it may be, you know, you're envisioning, and we can't avoid this, so you're envisioning 8:05, 8:10, whatever time you're going to make Havdalah, and afterwards, you're done. When it's Tisha B'Av, then you got the rest of the summer, and in a normal year, that's vacation, that's whatever it is. Yom Kippur, there's not another fast day coming along for another 4 months, 3 months, and it's the shortest fast day of the year, and Asar B'Tevet. So, but Tzom Gedalia, you fast, it's difficult, it's coming right off of Rosh Hashanah, and a week later you got Yom Kippur. So there's no sense of relief, shall we say, at the end. I don't mean to take away from your breakfast tonight, but there's no big sense of relief. But the bigger problem with Tzom Gedalia is that Tzom Gedalia really is, to sort of paraphrase that old thing, like, would Gedalia fast for you? It's like, what's the big deal? Why is this such a critical thing? And in order to understand that, we're going to take a circuitous route. And as I promised you last week, this week is going to be a crossover. So half the shiur is going to be today. The other half is going to be on Wednesday. I'm going to send everybody a link if you want to join us Wednesday. They'll both be on podcast. So if you miss part of today, if you can't come Wednesday, you can hear the whole thing. And it's one source sheet for the whole piece. But Tzom Gedalia is way bigger than we think. And it's way bigger than we think, and therefore it's critical for us to understand it. And also, hopefully, for the rest of the couple hours that we have here in L.A., to hopefully make that time more meaningful. All right, I'm going to go straight to the source material that was sent out. And I'm going to start, and a good part of what we do today is going to be questions. I'm going to start with two passages that have nothing to do with Gedalia, and they have everything to do with fasting. The first passage, as you could see, is a chapter 58, the whole chapter 58 of Yeshayahu. Chapter 58 of Yeshayahu is, by the way, along with the few, last few verses of 57, is the Haftarah next Monday morning. It's the Haftarah of Yom Kippur in the morning. And it's really about fast days and about the meaning of fast days. And it's a tremendously powerful parak. And I've always gotten a lot of meaning out of it. And I'll read a couple of lines from it to kind of highlight what it's about. But then when you step back from it, you realize that there was something very bizarre about the parak itself, right? Starting from Pasuk Gimel, where the highlight starts, Lama tsamnu v'lo ra'ita. The people are complaining that they have fasted and God is not watching, which means they're fasting for something and God's not responding. We afflict ourselves, and it's as if you don't know. And now the prophet's response is, what are you talking about? On your fast day, you're still doing business, and you're still running after your debtors and hurting them. He says, you're fasting while you're still in the middle of disputes with people. You're hitting with a fist, which is a fist of evil, whether it means hitting yourself in confession or whether it means you're actually hitting people, but with a wicked fist. Lo tatsumu chayom. Don't fast on a day like this. Tashmia b'marom kochem, that your voice should be heard up on high. Okay, very good. So what are we supposed to do? And Yeshayahu responds, Hachazei yetzom evchareyu. You think this is the kind of day of fasting I want? Says God. Yom anot adam nafsho, just to afflict yourself. Halachov kiagmon rosho, to bend your head over like a reed. Sakva efer yatsia, put up on the sackcloth and ashes. Put them on. Halazet tikrat som v'yom atzom adonai. You think this is a fast and a day that God wants? Now, of course, that's setting up the punchline and saying what God wants is not all of the external stuff of bowing your head and wearing the sackcloth, etc. And then he says, Halozet som evchareyu. This is the fast that I want. Pateach chartzubot resha. Loosen the fetters of wickedness. Hater agudot motab. Loosen the bonds of the one who is underneath them. Mishalach retzutzim chovshim chomotatenateku. Essentially, to loosen people from their debts and relieve them of their debts. And here's the key line that we're all familiar with. Halo faros l'ra'ev lachmecha. Slice some bread for the hungry. V'aniim rudim tavi bayit. Bring poor people into your house. Ki tireh arom b'chisito. You see somebody who's not clothed, clothe them. And don't ignore your own flesh. In other words, don't, one way of reading it would mean, don't go to such an extent to help everybody else that you make your own family penniless. Now, notice that this is a dispute which the Navi is having with the people, but the Navi is saying all the words, saying, this is what you're saying, this is what I'm saying, this is what God's saying. You're saying we're fasting and God's not answering. I'm saying you think this is the kind of fast God wants, and then God speaks and says, here's the kind of fast I want, essentially a fast in which you effect social justice. You take care of the poor and the indigent. You take care of the hungry and the homeless. You take care of those people. That's the kind of fast that I want, which is odd because when you're doing that, you're not necessarily fasting. So what it seems to mean is that you should be fasting and either on that day be involved in those activities, or you should have already been involved in those activities, then you can come to God and say, God, please answer us. Okay? Now, when that happens, take a look. Pasuk tet, az tikra v'adonai yaneh. Then you'll call out and God will answer. Teshava v'yomar hineni. It's beautiful. And God is going to answer you. I want to show you the last two psukim here, which you probably all know. The last two psukim, which are the reward for that kind of fast. Are im tashiv mishabat raglacha asot chafatzecha biyom kodshi. Now we already saw these psukim in an earlier shiur in Masachat Shabbat as being about Shabbat and speaking on Shabbat about certain things, dibur b'Shabbat, and these psukim are taken in but out of context as being about Shabbat itself. On Shabbat you don't go after your own needs. You don't look after your own business. V'karata la'shabbat oneg. Rather, you declare it to be a day of delight. L'kdosh Adonai v'chubad. The holy day of God is for honor. V'chibato me'asot rachacham tzochav tzachav v'daber davar. And you honor it rather than doing your own business or even talking about it. And then we get all the prohibitions of talking about things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbat and planning for business things and even going to check out how your business is doing on Shabbat. All of those prohibitions are kicked in there. And the reward is that if you do that, if you desist on Shabbat from those things, you will then take delight with God, and he will have you ride on the high places of the land. Now, we didn't look at this last time, but look at this reward. He will have you ride on the high places of the land, which is consistently used in Tanakh as a metaphor for victory, for military victory. V'achalticha nachlat Yaakov avicha. I will feed you the inheritance of Yaakov, your father, kipi Adonai diber. And that's the end of the prophecy. God has spoken. Now, out of context, it's about Shabbat. Now, in context, it's about Shabbat also. However, it's something about something broader. Because as we find throughout the Nevi'im, the storekeepers and the people who were accumulating debts from others and then coming to exact them with interest and with taking their children as slaves and all sorts of other things, would always sit there on Shabbat and say, I can't wait for Shabbat to be over so we can go and gouge more poor. And so Shabbat becomes sort of connected to this whole fast day phenomenon of saying, I'm going to observe the ritual law, but treat people like dirt and exploit them. And so this becomes part of that picture. But notice that the reward for this is a strange reward. You would think the reward will be, if you don't do your work on Shabbat, you desist from worrying about it, I'm going to give you a bracha so that you'll have 7 days worth of profit and 6 days of work, or something like that, which Chazal may have expressions like that. But here it's about political sovereignty and rule, which is a strange thing. But the larger question I want to ask about this passage, which is, again, is very popular, and again, is the Haftarah and Yom Kippur morning, so it, in normal years, it is the subject of many drashot. This year, there aren't many drashot. Who are these people? Why are they fasting? What's the fast? Is this fast Yom Kippur? It doesn't seem to be. Because the people are fasting for some sort of need that they see is not being answered. So they're not like they're fasting and saying, God, please forgive us. And they're turning around saying, you haven't forgiven us, because how would they know that? It sounds like there's some tangible need, tangible desire that's out there that they're fasting because they don't have it. And they're complaining that we're fasting and we're not getting what it is that we need. What fast is this? Now, I'll throw one little piece into here about Sefer Yeshayahu, which is critical to understand, but then we're going to leave this passage alone and we're going to come back to much later on, towards the end of the whole piece. Yeshayahu is the name of a prophet. Yeshayahu ben Amoz, who was a prophet in Jerusalem right at towards the end of the 8th century BCE. He was a prophet during the reign chiefly of Chizkiyahu, and the relationship between Yeshayahu and Chizkiyahu was likely the most convivial and supportive and friendly and constant relationship between any Navi and a king. For the most part, as you know, prophets and kings didn't get along. Matter of fact, it was the prophet's job to not get along with the king and tell the king what he was doing wrong. And so Yeshayahu is, just to put it in a historic context, his prophecy is during a period of Assyrian conquest. Assyria, which in the 8th century had risen again, and by the middle of the 8th century was making moves towards Egypt again, and came and in 722 famously conquered Shomron and exiled the northern kingdom, and that was it for them. We talked about that a little bit last Wednesday in the Shiur about Yirmiyahu. And Assyria then made moves towards Judea, because of course we're always in the way of fighting against Egypt, and they made moves towards Judea. And somewhere around 705 or something of that sort, they came to Judea and they conquered several cities, and there was a siege around the city of Lachish. And at that time, the king of Assyria, Sanherib, sent a messenger to Jerusalem, telling the people, if you remember from our Shabbat afternoon shiur, we studied this together, sent a messenger, Rav Shakeh, to get up there and tell everybody, give up, surrender, we'll take you to a much nicer land, and you're going to suffer here. And the people didn't do it, and the city was really under tremendous threat. And then there was a nace, and a malach came and slew 180,000 Assyrian soldiers, and the rest all fled. And then Sanherib came back, and he was in his temple in Nineveh, and he was assassinated by his own children. It was the kind of the beginning of the end of Assyria. They lasted almost another 100 years until Babylonia defeated them. But that was it as far as we were concerned. That's Yeshayahu. So when you read Yeshayahu, Perek Yod, which says, Hoi Ashur Shevet Api, Assyria is the rod of my anger to punish my people. That's all during the Assyrian period. Okay, flash forward to chapter 40 of Yeshayahu. I'm going to show you chapter 40 because you have to see it in order to understand what's going on in our text. Chapter 40 of Yeshayahu. Here it is. And I will put it up here with the English. Okay. Chapter 40. Nachamu, nachamu ami. The entire tone of the chapter changes. The entire tone of the speech changes. And the prophet is comforting his people and telling them that they are going to return and to straighten out the road and announce the big message that, take a look at source 3 and verse 3. Kol kore b'amidbar, you could see it in English. Panu derech Adonai, yashru ba'arava misila le'Eloheinu. And take a look, famously, at Pasuk Tet. Al har gavua, gavua lilach v'aseret Zion. Harimi v'koach kolech v'aseret Yerushalayim. Harimi al tirai, imri le'arei Yehuda, hine Eloheichem. Notice that this chapter is not speaking to people who are settled in their land and who are experiencing a threat from the outside. This is speaking to people who are not in their land and who are hoping and getting a message that they're going to return and that the great word of return has come. One of the most beautiful passages in this section is here in Perek Nun Bet. Many passages, including a lot of Lachadudi, was taken from this passage. But take a look at Pasuk Zion. It is one of the most beautiful passages in all of Tanakh, I think. Look how beautiful are the steps of the one bringing glad tidings on the mountains. What is he announcing? Mashmia shalom, mevaser tov, mashmia yeshua, omer letzion malach Elohayich. Now, this is all quite murky to us because it doesn't seem to fit the period. But I'm going to go to one other passage in this section, the section between chapter 40 and the end. And that is at the end of chapter 44. This is God, the Navi is talking about God, who does everything and fulfills all of his promises. Take a look at verse 26. Mekim dvar avdo v'atzat malachav yashlim, ha'omer li Yerushalayim tushav. He says to Yerushalayim, you will be built, you will be settled. U'la'arei Yehuda tibanena, the cities of Judea will be built. V'chorvoteha komem, I will raise up her destroyed cities. Now take a look at the last verse. Ha'omer l'koresh ro'i. He says about Koresh, he is my shepherd. Who's Koresh? Koresh is Cyrus. Cyrus is the Persian emperor who defeats the Babylonians in the year 539 BCE and then announces, it's a famous piece, it's the very end of Sefer Divrei Amin, the very beginning of Sefer Ezra, that Koresh announces all of the Jews who want to go back and rebuild their temple, here's materials, here's money, here I'm sending you off with support, go, mi Adonai Elohav v'yiyeh imo v'yal, who has God with him and will go. And in the next chapter, something even more remarkable shows up. Ko amar Adonai lim mishicho l'choresh. This is what God says to his anointed one, his Mashiach, which is Koresh. Now, very strange passage, but it's very hard to escape the conclusion that this section of Yirmiyahu comes from a later time and that it's authored by somebody who's living in Bavel, who is giving comfort to the people that they're going to yet return. Lest you think that I'm making this up, I'm not making it up, as you probably know, but I will show you here. Where are we? Okay, I'm going to have to show you because it doesn't work on a share. And I will show you the Ibn Ezra. Okay? Oops, sorry. Let's go back. Okay. At the very beginning of chapter 40, the Ibn Ezra famously says here, Nachamu, nachamu ami. You can see it right here, highlighted. Nidbeka zota parsha bavur, shizkir lemala, kikol otzot hamelech gam banav yigul lebavel. It connects to something earlier in Yeshayahu. And then he himself says that this prophecy, you could take a look at Ibn Ezra here, these prophecies were all stated by a later prophet who was in Bavel at the time. And they were appended to Sefer Yeshayahu for different reasons. Now, this opinion was not the mainstream opinion. It has, in more recent years, become more widely accepted that the second half of the book of Yeshayahu is really from later prophecies that were appended to the book of Yeshayahu for different reasons. And the truth is that there's absolutely nothing in our belief system or in our sources to deny this. And let me give you an example of that. The sugya in Masechet Bava Batra that goes through the authorship of the different books of Tanakh says, for instance, Yehoshua wrote his book. I'm going to stay away from the issue of the Torah. That's a thorny issue. Yehoshua wrote his book. The Gemara then challenges and says, what do you mean? The end of Sefer Yehoshua says Yehoshua died and he was buried. Who wrote that? So I said, okay, Elazar wrote that. They said, okay, but the last verse says Elazar died. Who wrote that? It says, okay, Pinchas wrote that. Which means that from Chazal's perspective, the fact that a book is named something or that it is authored by someone doesn't mean that it's totally authored by him. And the greatest example of that, of course, is Sefer Shmuel. Sefer Shmuel, Chazal said, was written by Shmuel. Very nice. The problem is Shmuel dies in chapter 25 of Shmuel Aleph, which means Shmuel is not around to even see David crowned. Shmuel certainly not around to see Shlomo born or the interaction with Avner, any of that. Shmuel's already dead. So Chazal say, yeah, the rest of it is written by Natan and God. In other words, the book has an author, but there may be other authors who contribute, and their works are included in the book. And much the same can be said, and is likely the most reasonable way to go in understanding Sefer Yeshayahu. The small little twist in this is that Yeshayahu chapter 40 through 55, which were either if you daven mincha already, you already heard it, or if not, I'm going to a later minyan. You will hear the Haftarah makes no mention of a Beit HaMikdash. It makes mention of returning home in a beautiful, very pastoral image. Starting in chapter 56, suddenly you have the verse you all know, V'havi'otim al har kodshi, v'simachtim b'veit tfilati, olotehem v'zivchehem l'ratzon ha'mizbachi. It's all about the Beit HaMikdash. And from there to the end of Sefer of Yeshayahu is a different focus. It's a focus that's Mikdash-based, which is why the current scholarship, and I say current, the last 200 years, maintains, and there's, again, no reason for us to have any problem with this, is that the third part of Yeshayahu really was composed by a Navi in Yerushalayim at the beginning of the third temple, of the second temple period, right? It's called Trito Isaiah, the third Isaiah. Lo Chashu, what we call him, we don't know his name, but his works are penned in. I'm telling you that because that's going to play a great role in understanding what this fast is about. The passage we looked at that you're looking at right now was Yeshayahu Nunchet, Isaiah 58. It's in that section that comes from the period of Yerushalayim at the beginning of the Second Temple. And the people are fasting for something, and they're not getting an answer. And God's response to them is, you're not getting an answer because of the way that you are treating each other. The reason that that is so significant is because it echoes something that we're going to see towards the end of the Shiur in the book of Zechariah. But first I want to take you to another puzzling passage. And this is without doubt 100% straight in the text, beginning of the Second Temple period. So beginning of the Second Temple period, let's recall what happened. A relatively small group of Jews returned under Cyrus's permission. They returned to Israel. They began building the Beit HaMikdash. They were despondent because early on in the building, they had trouble with their neighbors. Some things don't change. That's our neighborhood. And they had to suspend the building of the Mikdash for about 20 years until they're finally able to complete it under Daryavesh, and they got permission. At a later point, right after the Purim story happened, there was a critical Kohen. We got three Kohanim here today. A critical Kohen came from Bavel. His name was Ezra. Ezra Kohen Sofer Mahir. And he came to Jerusalem and he started instituting religious reforms to try to strengthen the religious identity of the community. A little while later, there was a fellow who was a cupbearer for the Persian emperor Artaxerxes. And Artaxerxes gave him permission to come for a short period to Jerusalem and help strengthen the walls of the city and the defenses of the city, because he liked this Jewish cupbearer, and he saw that he was very despondent about what was happening in Jerusalem, and so he let him go. And that's Nehemiah. In the book of Nehemiah, a lot of the story of what happened during this period is told, and we hear the following story, which is very strange. Here we go. It's source 2. Vayasfu kol ha'am ki ish echad el harachov asher lifnei shar hamayim, which means outside of one of the gates going into the Har HaBayit, they all gathered at the plaza there. Rechov is a plaza in Tanakh. Vayamru le'Ezra sofer lavi et sefer Torat Moshe asher tziva Adonai Yisrael. They told Ezra to bring a sefer Torah. Vayavi Ezra ha'kohen et ha'Torah lifnei ha'kahal me'ish v'arisha v'chol mevin lishmoa. And so he brought a Sefer Torah. And when was this? B'yom Echad l'chodesh hashvi'i. On the first day of the seventh month. That's the day we call Rosh Hashanah. Ezra brings this Sefer Torah. V'yikravo lifnei rechov asher lifnei shar ha'mayim. He reads publicly. Min ha'or ad machatzit hayom. From daybreak until midday. He's reading the Torah. Neged ha'nashim v'nashim v'mvinim osnei chol ha'am el sefer ha'torah. And everybody's listening. V'yamod Ezra sofer ha'migdal eitz asher asu la'davar. So he stands on a pedestal that they made. V'yamod etzlo. And he has on each side of him six leaders. And now, v'yiftach Ezra ha'sefer l'nei chol ha'am. He opens up the sefer in front of everyone. Ki me'al chol ha'am ayah. He was above them. So he showed them the sefer. U'chefitcho amdu chol ha'am. When he opened it up, they all stood up. Kind of what we would call Hagbah. Vayvarach Ezra Adonai Elohim HaGadol. Ezra blessed God. Vayanu chol ha'am amen, amen b'mol yedehem. Vayikdu vayishtachavu l'Adonai apayim ha'artza. And they all bowed to God. V'yeshua, and we got the whole list of people who are explaining it to them. And now watch what happens. In Pasuk Tet, it's very strange. Vayomer Nehemiah, who art Tirshasta? That's his other name. Ve'ezra kohen ha'sofer avavim v'nim et ha'am l'chol ha'am. Hayom kadosh hu l'Adonai Eloheichem. They turn around and say to them, today is a holy day to God. Why are they saying that? Al tit'ablu v'al tivku. Don't mourn and don't cry. What does that mean? Ki vochim kol ha'am. Everybody's crying. Ki shomam et divrei ha'torah. They heard the words of the Torah and they start weeping. And Ezra and Nehemiah have to get up and say, don't weep, today's a holy day. Strange, why are they weeping? Vayomer lahem, lechu ichlu mashmanim ushtu mamtakim. What does he tell them to do? Go home and eat good foods and drink good wine. V'shalchu manot lein nachon lo. Send food to people who don't have. Sounds like Purim. Ki kadosh hayom la'adoneinu. Today is a holy day for our God. Ve'al te'atzivu, do not be sad. God's rejoicing is your strength. You know, today is a day to be happy. You should be happy today. That's the proper day to worship God. But the real question is, why are they sad? Why are they crying? Why are they mourning? And the Levim have to tell them, shush, still, stop moaning. Today is holy. Stop mourning. So everybody went home and they did what they were told. They understood what he had told them. Now, what is going on? What is the fasting? Now, just as a footnote to this, to make this story even stranger, this is Rosh Hashanah. The people are hearing the Torah and they're weeping and they're mourning. And Ezra and Nehemiah tell them, stop weeping and mourning. Levim have to say, shash dil. Today is a day of rejoicing. Go home, have a good time, have food, share food with people who are poor, and rejoice. God's rejoicing is your strength. Very strange. Uvayom Hasheni, I'm continuing in Nehemiah. Nesfu Rashei Avot L'chol Ha'am HaKohanim V'Alvim Ezra Sofer L'Haskil Al Divrei HaTorah. They got together again, and they wanted to hear more Torah. V'Imtza'u Ketuv HaTorah. They found written in the Torah, Asher Tziva Adonai B'Yad Moshe, Asher Yishvu B'nei Yisrael, Basukot bechag b'chodesh hashvi'i. They discovered this law. We're supposed to live in Sukkot. Now, I want you to figure out how mind-blowing this is. Here these are the pioneers. These are the returnees. These are the former folk who came back to Yerushalayim to build the Beit HaMikdash, they've never heard of Sukkot. They found in the Torah, so you're supposed to build Sukkot. They evidently never heard of Rosh Hashanah. And by the way, notice who's really missing from this group. Yom Kippur is not here. Now watch what happens. And they send them all out to get wood in order to make Sukkot. They evidently were of the opinion, possibly, that the schach has to be from the Arba Minim. Parenthetically, if you ever go visit the Samaritans on Sukkot, we were there a couple of years ago in Har Gerizim. Their Sukkot, by the way, are all indoors in their living room. And the schach is all made of Arba Minim. Not necessarily our Arba Minim, but what they call Arba Minim. So they go and they build Sukkot, everyone on their roof, and they put it in the courtyard of the Mikdash, they put it out in the public plazas, etc. All right? So I mean, the questions are right there. You have the questions. What's the weeping? What's the mourning for? How come they didn't know about Sukkot? Why did Yom Kippur miss it? So to touch on this relatively minor issues relative to the Shir, it seems that when they left Eretz Yisrael, and you have to remember how amazingly powerful and insightful the rabbis at Yavne were 600 plus years later. Because what the rabbis in Yavne did was they reshaped a faith which is largely built around the Beit HaMikdash to be able to operate independent of the Beit HaMikdash. That didn't happen here. So the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. What happens to the Chagim? So Yom Kippur falls off the table at this point. Because if you think about it, Yom Kippur is an absolute Mikdash holiday. It's about the Kohen Gadol being Metaher at HaMikdash. Kohanim, you're all here. It's about the Kohanim being Matar Tamikdash, the Kohen Gadol being Matar Tamikdash. Without the Mikdash, Yom Kippur seems, and it falls off the table here in the meantime. Not, but they don't know about it. Sukkot, very reasonably, is a mitzvah that is connected to the land of Israel. It's all about the climes of Israel and the different species of Israel, and it's about the harvest of Israel. And so they went into Galut, they didn't have Sukkot. You take a holiday away for two generations and only a select group of scholars know about it. When you tell people about it, they're going to be surprised. You show it to them in the Torah and say, okay, so that's new. But Rosh Hashanah, what happened there? That's what we're going to keep on the boiler. So here's the third source I want to show you. And this third source is longish. I'll just read some certain parts of it. But it is also from the beginning of the Second Temple period. All the sources we're looking at are from the end of the 6th century, beginning of the 5th century BCE, through the middle of the 5th century BCE, beginning of the Second Temple period, which we call the Persian period. This is from the 7th and 8th chapters of the book of Zechariah. And so I'm going to ask you a question. Tisha B'Av was instituted because of the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, correct? When the Mikdash was rebuilt, what happened at Tisha B'Av? Did they continue to fast or not? The truth is, it's a little unclear. Watch the beginning of that question happen. Vahi bishnat arbala dayava shamelach hayadvar adonai zecharia barbala chodesh atshi b'chislev. God spoke to Zechariah in Yerushalayim. This is the fourth day of Kislev now, middle of the winter, beginning of the winter, in the fourth year of Dayavish, which means they are now they're a couple months away from dedicating the new Beit HaMikdash. So there was a delegation that came from Bavel, asking, Lemor el Kohanim, Adonai Tzvot Lemor, asking the Kohanim and the Nevi'im. We want to know what God says. So we don't have any Nevi'im in this year. We've got three Kohanim, so help us out. The question was, Ha'evkeh b'chodesh ha'chamishi? Should I weep in the fifth month? Hinazer kasher asiti zer kama shanim? Should I abstain as I've done for a number of years? Which means in Bavel, they have a custom to fast sometime during the fifth month, that's Av, to abstain maybe from wine, from meat, from pleasure, from whatever it might be during that time. And they've been doing it for quite a while. And the question is, should we continue? Makes sense. It's a good question. We're now back. The Beit HaMikdash is being rebuilt. And so we're asking, you know, by the way, they're asking about one fast, which is what we'll call Tisha B'Av, whether it was Tisha B'Av or the 10th of Av or the 7th of Av, but the fast we'll call it Tisha B'Av. Watch God's first answer. So this is the answer. And more el kol am ha'aretz ve'el ha'kohanim le'mor. Here's the answer you have to give to them. Because remember, they asked the Kohanim and the Nevi'im. So the Navi is going to tell the Kohen and the leaders, Amei Haaretz is the leaders, and everybody else. Kitzamtem v'safod b'chamishi u'vashvi'i. You fast and mourn in the 5th month and the 7th month. They didn't ask about the 7th month. You mourn and fast during the 5th month and the 7th month. V'zeh shivirim shana. This for 70 years you've been doing this. Hatzom tzamtuni ani. Is this my fast? Not my fast. Now listen to how much this echoes the first source we saw in Yeshayahu. That's why I mentioned Yeshayahu. Sounds a lot like this. If you eat and drink, you're eating and drinking. Meaning you fast, you eat, that's your business. Not mine. I never asked you to do either one of those. You know what you really need to listen to? You need to listen to the words of the Nevi'im that were there when Yerushalayim was comfortable, was sitting secure. That's what you have to listen to. And then he goes on and says, Mishpat emet shifotu. You have to have proper judgment. Treat each other kindly. Don't abuse the poor. Don't conspire against each other. That's what I told them back then. And they refused to listen. They put a stubborn shoulder against that. They made their ears too heavy to listen. They refused to listen. That was the message of the earlier Nevi'im. Who are the earlier Nevi'im? Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu comes and tells them. You want an example? Look in Yirmiyahu Lamed Daled. Yirmiyahu comes and tells them, this is what you've got to do. You got to cease the way that you treat each other. You've got to cease the corrupt courts. You've got to fix all that. And then the Mikdash won't be destroyed. Yerushalayim won't be destroyed. What happened? They were stubborn. And what happens, you see later on, they didn't listen to me. So when they cried out, I didn't listen to them. And they were destroyed. And now, watch what God says in Pasuk Aleph, the next paragraph. Vayhi dvar Adonai Tzvot l'emor. Ko amar Adonai Tzvot. Ki neiti l'tzion ki na gedola. I am now zealous on behalf of Tzion. V'chema gedola ki neiti l'tzion. I have great anger on behalf of Tzion. Ko amar Adonai shavti el Tzion. I have returned to Tzion. I'm back. Shachanti b'toch Yerushalayim. I dwell in Yerushalayim. V'nikra Yerushalayim ir ha'emet. V'har Adonai Tzvot har HaKodesh. Yerushalayim will be called the city of truth. And the mountain will be called the Holy Mountain. And then all these beautiful prophecies. I cannot. Ilai pasuk dalad and hey, I cannot do it. Sorry. Kor ma'adonai tzvot. Od yeshvu zekenimu zekenot b'chovot Yerushalayim. This is a prophecy that Zechariah announced approximately 35 years ago. It's a prophecy that our great-great-grandparents didn't get to see. Some of our grandparents didn't get to see. It's a prophecy that we see every day. We live in unbelievable times. Od yeshvu zekenim uzekenot b'chovot Yerushalayim. Old people, old men and old women will still live in the streets of Yerushalayim. Meaning you're going to see people live out long years in Yerushalayim. V'ish mish'anto v'yado mirov yamim. Every man will have a walking staff because they'll be so old. V'rechovot ha'ir yimalu yiladim v'yiladot mesachakim b'chovoteha. And the streets will be filled with little boys and girls playing in the streets. This is a vision that in Zechariah's time, as you look at the next pasuk, ki palei be'enei asherita amazeh, was wondrous to imagine that Yerushalayim could have thriving life and people playing in the kids playing in the streets and people living out long years was unbelievable, and it remained unbelievable until the end of the 19th century, until the beginning of the 20th century. We live in miraculous times, and the prophecy continues that I'm returning you. However, the theme continues throughout, which is you have to correct the way you treat each other. You have to correct the court system. You have to correct the way that you take care of the poor, the widow, the orphan. And now watch what he says in Pasuk Yod Chet. And then God said, which is the first time we ever heard of this, a fast in the fourth month. Machloket Rabbi Kivin, Rabbi Shimon, what that is, we hold that it is the fast of Tammuz, when we fast for the walls being broken down. Shivasa Tammuz. But Soma Chamishi, that's what we call Tisha B'Av. Soma Shvi'i, that's Tom Gedalia. But Soma Asiri, the fast of the 10th of Tevet, which we call Arba'at Somot, the four fasts. All right, and these will be days of great rejoicing and happy days and festive days, but love, truth, and peace. That's what you have to do. And the end of the prophecy is the days will come, as in this picture, where other nations are going to come to you and say, please take us through Shalayim. We want to find out what it's all about. You're going to go from being a downtrodden, backwater little province of the Persian kingdom into being an international center of religious seeking and guidance, because the ethical treatment that you have for each other is going to be so splendid, so marvelous, that everybody's going to understand this is where the true God is. This is where the God of Israel, who teaches the Torah of Israel. And that's why they're all going to say, like the last pasuk, Nelcha imachem ki shamanu imachem. People from all nations are going to say, we want to come with you because we know that God is with you. One little note, I don't know how many of you have been in Israel for Sukkot this year. Unfortunately, we can't get there. But on one of the days of Chol HaMoed, there is a festival of Umot HaOlam, a celebration in the streets of Yerushalayim. And there are people from non-Jews from all over the world who come for Sukkot Yerushalayim to fulfill this prophecy. And the prophecy in Zechariah, we're going to read it a week from the Shabbat in the morning, the first day of Sukkot, of all the nations coming to celebrate Sukkot and Yerushalayim. And they sam the streets with instruments and they dance and they sing to Hashem. It is like an amazing messianic vision. It's really something. But notice in this vision, the people come and ask about fasting on the fifth month. God's answer is you're fasting in the fifth month and the seventh month. And then at the end, we hear about all four. Why is the fast of the seventh month? That's Som Gedalia. Why is it singled out here? Why is it singled out? So the last thing I want to look at with you today, and by the way, I'm leaving you with questions. So I will send the link to the Wednesday Shiur, and of course you can all request a copy of the podcast after it's up. If you take a look here at the last page, as you can see, we've got all sorts of nuggets in the sources, but we're going to look at just source 9 through 13 and end with that. The Mishnah in Masachet Rosh Hashanah, very appropriate. You know, the first 2.5 chapters of Rosh Hashanah are not about Rosh Hashanah. They're about Rosh Chodesh. And they're chiefly about the system of testimony of the new moon and checking the witnesses and how we had to guard against the Sadducean and sectarian attempt to mess up our system. And how we then had to send people out to announce when Rosh Chodesh was because the signal fires weren't working anymore. And the Mishnah here says, Al shisha chodeshim ashtuchim yotzim. We send the messengers out for 6 months, meaning there's 6 different months that we need to announce to people because they need to know exactly what date in the month it is. You got to remember, the fact that today is the 3rd of Tishrei is only because we have a calendar. If we didn't have a calendar, then we would have been waiting on Shabbat to find out if the witnesses arrived and had seen a new moon on Thursday night, and therefore Shabbat was the first of the month. And if not, then Sunday would be the first of the month, and that would be the one day of Rosh Hashanah. Now, we have a calendar. But before there was a calendar, they had to be able to announce to people when the month is, based on the testimony. And if a date in that month was critical, they had to send agents out to tell them that the new month has come. All right, so what are the 6 months? Al Nisan Ne'a Pesach, that's a no-brainer. Yeah, as soon as Rosh Chodesh Nisan is announced, they have to send agents as far as they can get to tell them Rosh Chodesh Nisan was on this year. It's going to be on a Saturday night, on a Sunday. So the first Seder is on a Saturday night this year. So people will know when it is. Al Av Neatanit, they would send out messengers to say when Rosh Chodesh Av was, so they would know when Tisha B'Av was. All right? Al Elul Mnei Rosh Hashanah, they'd have to send people out in Elul to say when Rosh Hashanah is, although it almost doesn't exactly cover it 100%. Al Tishrei Mnei Tekanah Mo'adot, when Rosh Chodesh Tishrei was identified, they'd send agents out to tell them when Sukkot starts. Al Kislev Mnei Chanukah, and Al Adar Mnei Purim. So you want to know Chanukah is on the 25th of Kislev, you don't know when Rosh Chodesh Kislev is. By the way, Kislev, of course, is one of the months in Mar Cheshvan that can shift as far as being 30 or 29. So you can't rely on what you remember from the year before. And Adar, to know when Purim is. When there was a Beit HaMikdash, they'd also go out for Iyar to tell them when Pesach Sheni was. Okay, good. The one note that I have here is Av. As you can see, it's underlined. The Gemara asks, and the conclusion here you're going to find wild. V'leifku nami atamuz v'tevet. Why aren't they going out to announce when Rosh Chodesh Tammuz is and Rosh Chodesh Tevet is, so they'll know to fast on the 17th of Tammuz and the 10th of Tevet? You're telling them when Rosh Chodesh Av is, so they'll fast on Tisha B'Av. They already know when Gimel Tishrei is because of Rosh Hashanah, so Tzom Gedalia is covered. But what about those two? The Amar of Chana Bar Bizna Rashun Chasida. The answer is as follows. My Dichtiv. And he quotes the pasuk that we just saw in Zechariah. Ko Amar Adonai Tzvot, Tzom HaRivi'i, Tzom HaChamishi, Tzom HaShivi'i, Tzom HaAsiri, Yehi'el Levet Yehuda L'Sason U'L'Simcha. These fast days will become festive days. Now, simply in context, it's a prophecy that fast days will be turned into feast days, right? And the notion is that in some messianic era, those 4 days will be specially celebrated as feasts. Parenthetically, it was one of the things that Shabtai Tzvi and his followers instituted, was they celebrated Tisha B'Av as a happy day. They said Mashiach has already come, right? And there's a lot of interesting literature on that. But what does he do with this pasuk? He says, "Karelu tzom, v'karelu sason v'simcha." You're calling it a fast day. You're calling it a feast day. Which is it? He said as follows, as opposed to reading it simply, which is right now it's a fast, but one day it'll become a feast. Instead, he reads, "Bizman shiyesh shalom yula sason v'simcha." When there is peace, these are feast days. Ein shalom tzom. When there is no peace, then fast. Now, unlike some of the current slogans these days, peace isn't a binary thing. Chazal were much more sensitive than all the hashtags and slogans. Peace is not a binary thing. So they go on and say, I'm a papa achikamar. Meaning, you could have a situation when things are not great, but you're not under threat. Bizman sheyesh shalom yu l'sason l'simcha. When there's peace, then the sason l'simcha. Take a minute and look at Rashi in source 11. What's shalom? Shalom is when the non-Jews are not subjugating the Jews, when the Jews are independent. So there's certainly room to argue that in the modern day state of Israel, we have to view these differently. Nobody's doing it yet. I'm just pointing it out. The Rashbah says the same thing. Shishrael Shri Nalad Matan, that Am Yisrael is living in their land. The Ritva, on the other hand, says there's two conditions. They have to be living in their land, and the Beit HaMikdash has to be built. Okay, so just to point that out. But notice what, back in the Gemara, source 10. Hachi kamar, bizman shiyesh shalom yudas asonu simcha, when there's peace, which means some sort of good situation for Am Yisrael, positive situation for Am Yisrael, then these are feast days. Yesh shmad, when it's a time of persecution, tzom, then they're fast days. Ein shmad ve'ein shalom, but you're in the middle, which means you don't have the idyllic situation, but you're also not being persecuted. Ratzu mitanim, ratzu ein mitanim. You ever hear a phrase like this? If they want to, they fast. They don't want to, they don't have to fast. The fast days are all up for grabs. The Gemara then goes on to add, but what about Tisha B'Av? So why do they go out for, the answer is Tisha B'Av, there were so many terrible things happened that we fast. And therefore, they have to send the agents out. But we don't send agents out to say when Rosh Chodesh Tammuz is, because Sach HaKol, the fast of Tammuz is a voluntary fast. That's what they say. By the way, they're saying that about all three fasts. Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, Asar B'Tevet, and Tzom Gedalia as being basically voluntary. What does that mean? By the way, in practice, we don't do that. In practice, we fast. But what does that mean to say it's dependent on whether they want to or not? So what we've seen over the course of this of the shiur is a lot of questions, but I'm going to go over them and clarify the direction that we're going. The first question I had, we looked at this passage from Yeshayahu, which is from the beginning of the Second Temple period, where the people are fasting, they're not getting an answer. We don't know what they're fasting for. The Beit HaMikdash is built. What are they fasting for? And the rebuke is that you got it all wrong. You're not taking care of the way you treat the poor. And if you do that, you're going to have all of this great stuff happen, including, and not limited to, but including sovereignty and control. Where'd that come up? We then saw this very strange passage in Nehemiah where Ezra read from the Sefer Torah on Rosh Hashanah and everybody was weeping. And Ezra and Nehemiah had to cajole them to go home and celebrate and stop mourning. The Levim had to stop their mourning because their natural reaction was to mourn. What are they mourning about? Why are they mourning? Now we noticed that they didn't know about Yom Kippur. They didn't know about Sukkot. At least it seems they didn't know about Yom Kippur. They didn't know about Sukkot. And that seemed to be fine. But this Rosh Hashanah thing is very strange. We looked at the long passage from Zechariah where the people had come and said, now that the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, do we still fast on Tisha B'Av? Pretty much that's the question. And his answer was, you're fasting on Tisha B'Av and Tzom Gedaliah, that's your problem, not mine. That's your business, not mine. And then he goes through a long piece about how you have to treat each other. Said, if you want to rejoice, to stop fasting on these days, the trick isn't to ask, is the Beit HaMikdash built? The trick is to ask, have you fixed the things that broke it? I want to tell you, end up with a story. And he gives this beautiful, beautiful prophecy that ends with, that almost ends with, these feast day, fast days are going to become feast days. And ends with, they're going to reach a time when the whole world is going to say to Jews, please take us to your city and teach us, bring us to your God, because we heard that the God is with you. Jerusalem is going to become an international center of religious seeking. Amazing image. We then saw the Gemara that determined that the status of Tzom Gedaliah and Shivas V'Tammuz and Asar V'Tevet in times that are not times of absolute persecution is really a voluntary. It's a very strange halachic category, ratzu, lo ratzu. So we have to see what that's about. We're going to take a look at, on Wednesday, is we're going to take a look at the story of Gedaliah himself. Because in the middle of all of this is Gedaliah. Gedaliah plays a way more critical role than at least I grew up thinking when we heard all of those jokes about who's Gedaliah and would he fast for you. But we have to get a better sense of what was happening then and why his assassination was so crushing and the role that it plays in all of this. I just want to end with a story which is really cuts to the piece both in Zechariah and in Yeshayahu. I think I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. You all know that in normal summers, I attend the Yemei Iyun in Alon Shvut, where we have approximately 10,000 people coming to study Tanakh over the course of 5 days. I get to listen to my teachers and my colleagues teach, and I usually give a lecture. This year, we all did it by Zoom. And one of the highlights really is not in the lectures themselves, but is lunch. Now, lunch is not necessarily IAI, but once you get in line for lunch, and the line can be very long, you suddenly meet old friends, you meet teachers, and then you sit with them for lunch, and you can have the most amazing conversations with the most brilliant Tanakh minds in the world over lunch. And a few years ago, I was sitting with my friend, Rabbi Menachem Liebtag, and a teacher of ours, Rav Yoel Bin Nun, and several other teachers are sitting at lunch. And as you all know, I'm not shy. So I turned to them and I asked in Hebrew, I said, tell me something, Rav Yoel, why are you fasting on Tisha B'Av? Do you fast on Tisha B'Av? He said, yes. I said, why do you fast on Tisha B'Av? I want to see what you have to say. I fast on Tisha B'Av. I want to know why he fasts on Tisha B'Av. I mean, is God? Is there anything God hasn't given us? God has given us a land. God has given us a country. God has given us the ability to create a thriving economy and a first-rate military and you name it. And now, Baruch Hashem, peace treaties with our neighbor. Unbelievable. So what are you fasting for? So he told me an amazing thing. He said he was on an interview program on TV, Israeli TV, And he was asked the same question, and he quoted Zechariah Chet, the passage we saw. And he said, the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because of the way that we treat each other, especially the way we treat the disenfranchised, the poor, the lonely. He said, as long as we live in a state in which there's an underclass, as long as we live in a state in which there are people who are victims of abuse and they're not taken care of, whatever it may be, then we have to keep fasting on Tisha B'Av. We're not fasting on Tisha B'Av for what we lost. We're fasting on Tisha B'Av for the fact that we haven't fixed it. That's exactly what Zechariah says. And that was the TV show. He then told me that half a year later, he was walking down the street somewhere, and some clearly secular woman came up to him and said, Ata Zeb Binun, are you Rabbi Binun? He said, yes. She goes, I'm a completely secular woman. I don't keep Shabbat. I watched your TV show last summer. And I want you to know that ever since then, like last summer, and I committed for the future, I fast on Tisha B'Av. Because you're right. So the message that Zechariah, that Yeshayahu Nunchet are giving us is a message of saying the fasts have to impact on how we treat each other. Because you're fasting because something terrible happened. Fixing it doesn't mean rebuilding the building. It means finding out why it was broken and fixing that. And that's what Zechariah says. That's why Chazal say, Agrata de Tanita Sidkata. The real sachar you get for a fast is the tztaka you give that night. And Rashi says, the tztaka you give when the money you saved on lunch, you give that in tztaka. That's the real reward of a tanit, is the tztaka. All right, so what we're going to do on Wednesday is we're then going to circle back. And again, if you can't make it, fine. But it'll be recorded and you'll be able to hear it. We're going to circle back and we're going to see Gedaliah's role in all of this, the role of the assassination of Gedaliah in all of this, and hopefully be able to answer all of the questions.